While Plato did not openly make reference to the law of three or seven in the manner of mystics slash mathematicians such as Pythagoras, Bruno, Gurdjieff, and Uspensky, he did affirm the existence of an inner source of knowledge that those seeking genuine enlightenment must pursue, see the one teacher. In Plato's Principles of Anamnesis, he explained that the true teacher was like a midwife who did not instruct and use rote programming of the student's mind as is the case today, but instead must aid with the birth of knowledge that was already there in the student, see Anamnesis, the innate knowledge of the truth of all truths. Which means that he was affirming the reality that the source of truth and knowledge lies within each person's own mind, and genuine learning is to embrace the process of drawing this inner source out into the student's physical conscious mind, and that this fact of reality has only now been proven by modern cutting-edge scientists, is explored at the true facts and realities of life. And what this means is that by not teaching the student how to tap into this inner source of knowledge, traditional academia does more to alienate the student from the source of knowledge that is superior to all the books and libraries of men, see Jesus, the law, professor. And if it is true that God and all the answers to the mysteries of life lie before our very eyes, and having ignored the enigma of the twisting of the octaves, science has remained not only ignorant of the enigma of the natural laws wherein, it is our own organic human blindness and limitations that inhibits us from acquiring the higher knowledge we seek, then the only real solution for the person seeking this higher knowledge is to overcome their own cause of inherent human blindness in pursuit of seeking the true source of truth that mainstream religion, philosophy, and science has ignored. The knowledge of the natural laws and especially the pattern of the law of octaves that the original core disciples of Jesus and the way understood was the basis of their assertion to others that there is only one teacher which they portrayed as the true prophet. And this is demonstrated in the words of the Apostle Peter, who is quoted in the homilies of his disciple Clement. Hence, O beloved Clement, if you would know the things pertaining to God, you have to learn them from him alone, because he alone knows the truth. For if anyone else knows anything, he has received it from him. In further explanation, Peter stated that the one teacher and true prophet is within the mind of every one of us. Peter then warns the people, wherefore seek him first of all, and if you do not find him, expect not that you shall learn anything from any other. The problem is that only those who can overcome and prevail over the twisting of the law of octaves and resolve the condition of inherent organic human blindness are able to tap into this inner source of knowledge that eliminates the need for the person from having to learn from books, teachers, and the libraries of men. If we look at the picture of a typical keyboard on the right, can we see the anomaly that the mystics make reference to? What we see is the whole notes represented in the white keys, and the half tones in the black keys. Regardless of the fact of whether we understand music or not, what we should quickly recognize is the easily discernible from a purely mathematical perspective, and the fact that if the white keys are representative of a whole note progressive sequence, then why doesn't every whole note interval have a half tone? In the image of the keyboard, the absence of a black key between the third to fourth white keys and again, the absence of a black key between the seventh to eighth key should cause us to question why? Why is there no half tone in the mathematical sequence represented in the progression between the third to fourth and seventh to eighth sequence of notes? Moreover, the anomaly remains regardless of what note we begin the sequence on. And if it is true that while the mystics have pursued the causal factor and have portrayed it as the true source of all human ignorance of man's higher reality, while science has failed to understand the enigma of the anomaly, then those who embrace the wisdom of the scientist over that of the mystic are themselves choosing the path of ignorance and unknowing. When rightly understood, it is the expression of the natural laws that has the effect of fooling our sense of hearing. At important points in the sequence of the natural laws, an enigma exists that causes us to hear a half tone as if it is a whole tone progression. When Gurdjieff portrayed his law of three, it was because the anomaly was predictable in every sequence. Likewise, the same is true of the law of seven and the progression from one octave sequence into the next. And while many mystics have sought the cause of the anomaly, claiming that the effects of the anomaly creates an inner barrier to the development of man's intellect and consciousness, see mental barrier, The vast majority of scientists have ignored the twisting of the laws as if it doesn't matter and has no impact on their pursuits. And from this perspective, the sincere inquiring mind of the rational seeker or investigator should immediately ask the question, why isn't there a half tone between the third and fourth note on the keyboard and musical scale? Though the answer is very simple, the reality that is portrayed is so esoteric and beyond physical reality as we know it, that the most accomplished musicians cannot supply you with the answer to the enigma and enigma that unknowingly envelops every aspect of our lives and creation. The answer: there is no half tone between the white keys that are next to each other, because the fourth white key in the progression is a half tone the human organic ears falsely hears as a whole tone. When Paul stated to the Christians who he had himself taught what he portrayed the milk of gospel designed for babes in Christ, who were too immature to understand the spiritual meaning of the gospels, and he was therefore forced to present a parabolic, cussy historical account to them which he called the traditions of Christ and the physical resurrection and elementary teaching that the church father Origen admitted was preached in the churches for the simple-minded and for the ears of the common crowd who are led on to live better lives by their belief, Origen contra Celsum. It is the natural twisting of the law of octaves that keeps the thinking and cognitive development of organic man earthbound. That prompted Paul to convey the reality to the faith-based Christians that they were incapable of comprehending the spiritual meaning of the gospel when he stated, "But the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, nor can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned." 1 Cor 2:14c Animal Soul. The question is, why can't the natural organic mind of man comprehend the spiritual meaning of the gospel and the mysteries of the kingdom of God? The answer is, because of the natural anomaly in his senses and organic cognitive reasoning that causes the whole framework of his thinking to remain anchored to the earth, that is, earthbound, that renders him incapable of comprehending anything beyond this three-dimensional reality that he does not at all understand the true nature of. It is important to understand what can be portrayed as the frequency shifts in the intervals that cause what can be called the twisting of the law of octaves within the pattern of mind as portrayed in the Tree of Life. The individual notes of the musical octave is expressed in the progressive, mathematical frequency scale in the familiar terms, do, re, mi, la, sol, la, se, and then evolving into the next do of the next subsequent octave. Yet, as demonstrated in the previous link on the twisting of the law of octaves, the frequency steps that we hear are not uniform, and while the progression in musical notes sounds uniform to the human ear, what on the surface appears to be a flaw in human hearing exists on all levels of our being. And if we ask the question, why does it matter? What can be portrayed as the twisting of the octaves or laws, when understood and applied holographically to all the natural laws, has the effect of keeping our thinking and perceptive vision and understanding earthbound? What is earthbound? Paul wrote that organic natural man was incapable of comprehending his own higher soul and spiritual reality, see animal soul. The gospel itself portrays this realm as the outer darkness of mind and being, see outer darkness. The analogy of Plato's cave portrays mankind as prisoners in a realm of shadow image illusions, see Plato's cave, that modern science has only now begun to confirm the above, and has concluded that mankind is blind to the source of what we see, see the true facts and realities of life, is a reality that few students of science are even capable of coming to terms with. And therefore, it is because of the twisting of the natural laws that we are shackled to a condition of self-ignorance. It is true that what we see is incomplete shadow images of a higher reality that we are organically blind to, as demonstrated at the foregoing link. Then the whole framework of our thinking based upon the incomplete shadow images is gravely flawed. The twisting of law at the third interval. In music, the octave is expressed in the familiar terms do, re, mi, la, sol, la,
si,
do, with the second do being the beginning of the next octave. When the first do is sounded, this is passed on to the second note as represented in the term re. Here is where the problem begins, that is, the second note not only sounds the appropriate note slash frequency, which is re, in response to the previous do, but symbiotically on another level, inadvertently and automatically, starts its own beginning octave independently of the first. What this means is that when the sequence is passed on to the third note, it not only responds to the initial do-re by sounding a mi, but plays a re in response to the do played by the second note sequence, as well as its own do in an independently initiated octave. The result is that when the third sequence attempts to pass on the preceding sequences plus its own, the combination creates a false completion resulting in a twisting of the octave, and what we hear as a full tone is actually a half resulting in the sequential pattern twisting and going in a different direction other than what we would perceive to be a straight line. This twisting in turn creates a loop, which inadvertently returns the sequence in the direction of its initial beginning. The result is that in the same way that we hear what sounds to us to be a sequence of whole tones, even though it is not, without realizing it, the laws slash octaves turn, and we end up confined into a three-dimensional reality because the laws twist, as demonstrated in the example of the octaves, and we cannot perceive reality beyond the limitations of this world. When the octave twists at the third to fourth sequence, the progression turns back to the earth. It is at the third point in the progression of the laws that test the progression for substance, and having failed the test of wholeness at the third to fourth sequence, it is drawn back to the earth, earthbound, by what is allegorically portrayed in the scriptures as satanic forces. In order to be applicable in someone's developmental life, the person must be able to envision what is being presented. Most of what I have written in the above would be meaningless to most people, that is. So, the laws twist, and limitations are placed on your thinking. To the vast majority of people, this reality portrayed in this manner is worthless, that is, they can't cognitively act upon what is being stated. But if I say that there is a monster angel who is striving to keep your thoughts on the earth, keeping you from doing the commandments of God, thereby striving to keep you from entering into eternal life, this allegorical portrayal is something they can act upon in their daily life. In the foregoing, I have capitalized the word allegory because what is portrayed as a fallen angel, Satan, in the scriptures, is actually the personification of a natural law of creation that serves an important purpose in the developmental evolution of mankind. In the parable of the prodigal son, when the son falls under the influence and control of the citizen of the far country, reference is being made to being anchored by the gravity of mind as personified in the allegorical portrayal of satanic earthbound forces. God and the realities of creation are set before you, but because of the twisting of the natural laws, your perceptive vision fails to evolve beyond a certain point and remains earthbound and drawn back into the physical slash carnal. Why? The purpose of the laws is to evolve the soul to a condition of wholeness level upon level and upon examination. Without the necessary wholeness, you are incapable of comprehending even your own higher soul reality. If your true self, a 12-dimensional being whose consciousness is the perfect balance of male and female, the sum total of all the strengths of the races and divisions among mankind, the sum total of all the experiences of all the lives that the soul has lived since the dawn of time, all that is heavenly, spiritual, and earthly, physical, inner and outer, then it does not take much to realize that few people have anything in common with their true self. Why is there such an enormous difference between the person we are in this world and our true self? Why is there such an enormous difference between an embryo that has begun to form in the womb and a human adult? A reality that I will present throughout this article is the reality that when we emerged out of our mother's womb, we then entered a mental womb whose purpose was to evolve our mind. But unlike our institutions of learning that employ rote programming of the student, this realm as God's university employs experiential knowledge to evolve the soul through the levels of spiritual evolution, which means that we must be presented with choices and then we mature by living out the choices we have made. And the natural laws that came into being in the Alpha of creation have been imbued with the process of bringing this process of maturation and evolution about in the existence of every soul. In looking at the image of the mind as patterned in the tree of life at the left, spirit is patterned in the top sphere as the source, with its reflective opposite half patterned in the bottom earthly sphere. The first cause of initiation of all thoughts begins in the upper spiritual, male, into its opposite half, female slash reflective, in the physical bottom earthly sphere, wherein the connection between the two, mind, raises upward in the process of mental conception. Thus, we have Do, Re, and Mi, and it is at that point where, because of lack of wholeness, the progression of the mental octave is subject to testing, and if the test of wholeness fails, subject to the twisting of the progression. When rightly understood, the same universal laws that control the physical are also true in the mental and the spiritual levels of mind and being. All conception in the physical requires the active essence of the male to be released in the womb of the female, where there is the opportunity of an embryo to be formed when the male and female essence combine into one. The same laws that control physical conception are at work in the process of mental conception, and for the progression to arise up into the center column of the tree of life, there must be a merger of positive, male, and negative, female, to be at one. But this can only be accomplished when the lower earthly nature supports the upper heavenly nature, which means that the lower earthly nature must have been refined as personified in the good ground in the parable of the sower and the seed. Therefore, all progression once the exchange has been made from the first, heavenly, into the second, earthly, sequence, is determined by the condition and refinement of man's lower nature. Allegorically, this has been personified in the scriptures as the refinement of man's lower animal nature. See organic man ruled over by his lower animal nature, and the construction of the living consecrated temple of the body. See animal sacrifice and the living temple. Thus, for the thought progression to arise up the center and through the tree of life, man's lower nature must be refined and evolved to support his upper spiritual nature, and Adam, male, and Eve, female, must be joined together as one flesh. And this is portrayed in the teaching that was preserved in the Gospel of Thomas, saying 22. If the above diagram is the pattern of mind, then when the key of knowledge is properly applied to the scriptures, what you are presented is the blueprint of the mind. Paul correctly portrayed the written text and narrative of the scriptures as the letter that killeth, and Jewish folktales, see 2 Cor 3, 6, Titus 1, 14. Why? Because the literal text of the scriptures is a quasi-historical facade that is necessary for the very limited instruction of the immature seeker, with the true spiritual meaning remaining preserved and concealed beneath the garb of allegory. See an inconvenient truth. The Church Father Origen explained that scripture contains an unhistorical element inwoven with the history, in order that the worthlessness of the latter may drive us to seek the spiritual meaning. Origen quoted under Origen Adamdius, the Encyclopedia of Religion and Ethics, further explaining in De Principis that, where the word found that things done according to the history could be adapted to these mystical senses, he made use of them, concealing from the multitude the deeper meaning. But where in the narrative of the development of supersensual things, there did not follow the performance of those certain events which were already indicated by the mystical meaning, the scripture interwove in the history the account of some event that did not take place, sometimes what could not have happened, sometimes what could but did not, that the undeveloped carnal mind of both the blind believer as well as the skeptic critic both attempt to ignore these important inconsistencies, see inconsistencies purposely written into body of scriptural text, and attempt to read the scriptures as an historical account, inhibits them from perceiving and understanding the great truths that lie concealed beneath the allegorical texts. Like the Pharisees, they interpreted the scriptures outwardly, incapable of comprehending that what is being presented to the reader can be portrayed as the cosmology of their own mind, presenting the laws and forces of consciousness. And in the proper application of the scriptures as the key of knowledge, the Church Father Origen writes, but all the narrative portion, relating either to the marriages, or to the begetting of the children, or to battles of different kinds, or to any other histories whatever, what else can they be supposed to be, save the forms and figures of hidden and sacred things? As men, however, make little effort to exercise their intellect, or imagine that they possess knowledge before they really learn, the consequence is that they never begin to have knowledge. What does this mean? What it means is that all the narrative portion of the scriptures, relating either to the marriages, or to the begetting of the children, or to battles of different kinds, or to any other histories whatever, do not at all pertain to historical accounts of man's more distant past, but rather to the forces and laws that are presently working within man's own mind and being. Why? How could Origen, who was called the Prince of Christian Learning second only to the apostles themselves, state that the historical interpretation of the scriptures is worthless, and that what is presented in the written text as marriages, the begetting of children, and the many various wars and battles are not at all historical, but rather an allegorical portrayal of the forces and laws working within one's own mind and being? That the undeveloped carnal mind of both the blind believer, as well as the skeptic critic, both attempt to ignore these important inconsistencies, see inconsistencies purposely written into body of scriptural text, and attempt to read the scriptures as an historical account, inhibits them from perceiving and understanding the great truths that lie concealed beneath the allegorical texts. Like the Pharisees, they interpreted the scriptures outwardly incapable of comprehending that what is being presented to the reader can be portrayed as the cosmology of their own mind presenting the laws and forces of consciousness. And in the proper application of the scriptures as the key of knowledge, the Church Father Origen writes, "But all the narrative portion, relating either to the marriages, or to the begetting of the children, or to battles of different kinds, or to any other histories whatever, what else can they be supposed to be, save the forms and figures of hidden and sacred things? As men, however, make little effort to exercise their intellect, or imagine that they possess knowledge before they really learn, the consequence is that they never begin to have knowledge. What does this mean? What it means is that all the narrative portion of the scriptures, relating either to the marriages, or to the begetting of the children, or to battles of different kinds, or to any other histories whatever, do not at all pertain to historical accounts of man's more distant past, but rather to the forces and laws that are presently working within man's own mind and being." Why? How could Origen, who was called the Prince of Christian Learning second only to the apostles themselves, state that the historical interpretation of the scriptures is worthless, and that what is presented in the written text as marriages, the begetting of children, and the many various wars and battles are not at all historical, but rather an allegorical portrayal of the forces and laws working within one's own mind and being? To understand the foregoing, you must first understand my above statement. When rightly understood, the same universal laws that control the physical are also true in the mental and the spiritual levels of mind and being. And this explains Origen's statement in Contra Celsism, where he explained about the allegorical, non-historical nature of the scriptures. It is sufficient, however, to represent in the style of a historic narrative what is intended to convey a secret meaning in the garb of history, that those who have the capacity may work out for themselves all that relates to the subject. What does it mean? That those who have the capacity may work out for themselves all that relates to the subject. It means that when you apply the scriptures as the key of knowledge, that there exists important guidelines in their interpretation, and that you must begin to understand the natural laws, and you must recognize that the same laws working upon the physical is also working upon the mental and spiritual levels of self and creation. While conception, birth, and evolving to adult maturity is a rather lengthily single process in the physical, under the pattern of natural laws, the same process on the level of mind requires a great multitude of successive thoughts that are conceived and raised up over the course of expanded development. In the above I wrote, "When the first doe is sounded, this is passed on to the second note as represented in the term re. The second note not only sounds the appropriate note / frequency which is re in response to the previous doe, but symbiotically on another level, inadvertently and automatically, starts its own beginning octave independently of the first. What this means is that when the sequence is passed on to the third note, it not only responds to the initial do re by sounding a mi, but plays a re in response to the do played by the second note sequence, as well as its own do in an independently initiated octave. The result is that when the third sequence attempts to pass on the preceding sequences plus its own, the combination creates a false completion resulting in a twisting of the octave. Do, the male DNA enters the womb, and rejoined with the DNA of the female, and what is not understood is the fact that the spiritual DNA of the incarnating soul is then joined as the third force balance of the sperm and ovum at conception. In understanding this pattern of law as being applied to the countless thoughts conceived and required in the development of the mind, one is able to understand Origen's statement. that those who have the capacity may work out for themselves all that relates to the subject. In the pattern of the mental octave, each thought is conceived through the same process in accord with the same natural laws. The generative power is the mental do in the upper sphere in the head, and the mental do is transferred to its opposite polarity or half at the bottom of the tree of life, where a mental re which reflects the do is then merged and progressed into the third mental me in the return, female to male reflective return, is raised up into the foundation sphere of the mind as patterned in the tree of life. In the same way that in the formation of an embryo, the spiritual DNA of the incarnating soul is joined with emerging sperm, male DNA, and ovum, female DNA, in physical conception, the foundation sphere of mind as patterned in the diagram of the tree of life is connected to all the lives the soul has lived from the alpha of creation. This connection to all the previous lives the soul has lived is through what can be portrayed as the soul-mind matrix. See below the evolving soul. The degree of wholeness that a person can achieve is greatly dependent upon the wholeness of self achieved by the soul of that person over the course of all the lifetimes that soul has lived in conjunction with the degree of wholeness the person has achieved in their present life. Without the necessary foundation of wholeness where duality is overcome, the progression of the octave twists, sending the thought into the outer spheres of the male and female columns of the tree of duality. Channeling the bio-energy of the generated thought out into nature as portrayed in the squandering away of the inheritance of the prodigal son on riotous living, causing the prodigal son to dwell under the power of the citizen of the far country, sometimes allegorically portrayed as Satan and the god of this world. In order for the mind to undergo the process of deepening and expansion, the conceived thought must arise up through the center and up the tree of life. If the conception of one's thoughts lacks wholeness, the thought cannot enter the center column, and the twisting of the law of octaves by the natural laws causes the progression to be diverted into the outer male or female columns, which are also known as the tree of duality or the tree of knowledge of good and evil that brings death, mental flatlining, to the eater thereof. Because the person's generated thought fails the test of wholeness at the third to fourth sequence, thereby inhibiting the development of your mind and consciousness beyond what Paul portrayed as the animal soul level of organic consciousness, it is impossible for you to comprehend reality from the next level of mind and being. In other documents on this website, I have defined the allegorical biblical personage of Satan as a collective consciousness that is of the earth, that is, the gravity of mind that keeps our thinking attached to this realm. When we are in what can be portrayed a mechanical mindset mode, that is, not totally conscious of what we are doing with our thinking deluged with random and seemingly never-ending thoughts often portrayed as race mind, and merely going through the routines of life, our mind is being diverted by nature in that loop that keeps the whole of our thinking and perceptive vision attached to the earth. In fact, we are often so being controlled by nature that we can't even remember what we did the day before. It is as if our life in an automatic mode, and we only wake up when something or someone collides with us. It is this condition that the Apostle Paul defines as being of a natural mind. The scriptures are not at all historical accounts, but they contain allegorical catalysts that are employed to bring about the expansion and deepening of the mind in order to enable the seeker of higher truth to be able to comprehend their own higher soul and spiritual reality. See the reality of the original Gospels. As stated in the above, allegorically, Satan is not a being, but rather, Satan is the embodiment of what can be portrayed as the natural laws, see the laws of creation, that maintain what can be personified as the gravity of mind that has the effect of shackling mankind to an earthbound mindset, rendering him incapable of comprehending man's higher soul and spiritually reality. Throughout the scriptures, what is allegorically personified as angels is in fact the natural laws of creation that control our development of mind and spiritual advancement. When Jacob wrestled with the angel by night, see Genesis 32:22-31, prevailing over the angel at dawn, what is being portrayed is the advancement achieved as one prevails over the natural laws of consciousness, and in the portrayal of Jacob, achieving what is personified in the name Israel. The meaning of the name Lucifer is usually identified with Satan. The name Lucifer, which means bearer of light or morning star, allegorically refers to his former splendor as the greatest of the angels. And when Jacob was portrayed as having prevailed over the laws at dawn, becoming what is personified as spiritual Israel, Jacob was able to overcome the natural laws and comprehend what the organic consciousness of man cannot at all understand. And the importance of this achievement is portrayed in the words of Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas, where it is stated, "The disciples said to Jesus, 'We know that you will depart from us. Who is to be our leader?' Jesus said to them, 'Wherever you are to go to Jacob, James, the righteous, for whose sake heaven and earth came into being. See Seeking Jacob/James. Thus, reference is not being made to an actual man named Jacob, James, but was as personified, and the meaning of the name Jacob is ultra important to all seekers of truth and higher knowledge. And what is allegorically portrayed is equally important to the seeker on the spiritual path, as it is to the philosopher and scientist. And if it is true that heaven and earth came into being as an environment that would manifest growth and development maintained by the natural laws, angels, that were put into effect in the Alpha of creation, then the primary purpose of this physical realm is to evolve all of creation into a condition of wholeness and completion in our ultimate destiny, which can be portrayed as the Omega of enlightened light. And what is allegorically personified in the name Jacob, James, who wrestled with the angel by night, and prevailing at dawn and becoming all that is manifest in the name Israel, is a process all of mankind is evolving through. And when Israel is portrayed as the chosen people of God, what is being personified, not a family of people, but rather the wholeness of mind and being that heaven and earth came into being to bring about within the existence of all of mankind. Yet, because they lack an understanding of the natural laws, the vast majority of spiritual seekers, philosophers, and scientists remain ignorant of how to overcome the inherent ignorance and carnal limitations of the human mind.